Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained,
the number one game development podcast about game development and a lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and joining me, two special guests, Christopher Ng and Philip Benefal. How are you?
Hello.
Good. Great.
Doing well.
All right. So this is actually the part of the podcast where the guests, such as yourselves, introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers out there, who you are, where you've been, and where you're headed.
Yeah. Should I start, Phil?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Christopher. I started as a composer. I almost said I'm still a composer. I also was the guy having the idea for our adaptive game music tech, and I'm the co-founder with Philip for Elias Software. I'm the product owner, and I work with a lot of things within the company, but I also compose. So I compose almost half my time right now for a game called It Takes Two. A short introduction. Mm-hmm. Philip.
Yeah, and I'm Philip Benefal. I'm a developer. I usually code in C. That's where I feel most at home. I'm blind since birth, so I code a little bit differently from what you might imagine. I have a speech synthesizer that reads the screen to me, and then I just type on a regular keyboard. So my workstation looks a little bit weird, I guess, for most people. I don't even have a screen on my desk. So people are like, well, where's the computer? Well, it's there, right there. So that's usually how we start. I'm also the co-founder along with Chris. And I handle usually the low-level stuff, performance and stuff like that's what I usually do on a daily basis.
Yeah. And the reason we can't see you is because you're blind, right? No, yeah, it's the other way around. Yeah. Sorry.
Exactly.
Webcam shy. But there's a lot to unravel here. So first of all, of course, Philip, we just have to address like that. That is a very huge, to you, it seems very normal, right? Like it seems like nothing out of the ordinary. You have your tools that you need to kind of perform at your work.
I got my terminal.
Yeah, the industry as a whole, I think in the last 6 months especially, have been trying to driving towards being more inclusive and for accessibility. And a lot of that is because we are meeting online and workplaces have to adapt to not being at physical workplaces anymore. Do you feel that change affecting a lot of developers, or are you seeing that yourself, or... this is something I've noticed in the last couple of months because of COVID, where everyone's meeting online more.
Yeah. I mean, I've certainly noticed that, and, you know, myself included. I usually work a lot from home because, you know, I can work from pretty much anywhere that has a C compiler and an internet connection, you know, but, the funny thing is my code runs in a lot of games and I can't play any of them, which is it's always a bit of an inside joke.
It's kind of sad though.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I do make games for the blind as well. So in my free time, but, those are sort of the same as regular games, just without, the visuals. So anything that you would normally represent with, visual cues, you know, graphics, etc., are done with audio cues like dialogue, music, sound effects, etc. So that's sort of my hobby when I'm not working at Elias.
Mm-hmm. And And of course, Christopher, you were kind of mentioning that, you know, you and Philip created this company and its focus is on sound and reimagining what sound, how it works within the game industry, within games. Can you kind of expand on that a bit on what Elias is about?
Absolutely. When I got my first gig as a composer for a game, it was kind of a really cool game. It got canceled, but it was really cool for 2 years in development. And it was me and two other composers making music. We had a real symphonic orchestra, and it was kind of a dream gig. But the thing that I was so surprised with was that it wasn't really connected to the game, not in my opinion. It was like, yeah, here's some music and here's some other music, and we just crossfade, and it's like a kind of DJ approach. I didn't thought it sounded any good. So when that game got canceled, like, I had a lot of free time. and I started to write down my ideas, and I also actually did some demos. I had what was that game I did? Time Shifter, I think it was called. You could do your own levels, and I did a level, and I composed music for it, and I showed it to some game companies and told them about my ideas, and everyone said that, well, come back to us with a prototype. And I'm not a composer. I'm not a programmer. I'm a composer. So the only thing I can program is a Commodore C64. But that's not the newest tech out there. So I realized I need a programmer to make this prototype. And I used to write music for Philips games. And I thought, well, isn't this the perfect guy? He's a great programmer, but his ears are also like extreme. And I asked Philip, can't you, Philip, what was your reaction when I came up with this fantastic idea?
Well, I did think it was a fantastic idea. And then you asked me, can you do it? And I said, no.
Yeah.
So the reason I said that is because I was worried about the performance implications. You know, we only have a tiny slice of the disk and the CPU of a game, you know, so I was thinking, probably too heavy, you know, because it's going to be like this and like this. But then I thought about it for a few days and I came up with some solutions that I thought maybe this would make it, you know, a little bit lighter. So I actually called him back, and, you know, I told him no at first. And then after about a week, I called him back and I said, hey, I have some ideas. I don't know if it's going to work, but let's make a prototype.
Yeah. So we did. And actually one of the studios decided to try it in their game Gauntlet. The studio was Arrowhead in Stockholm. I think it was Warner Brothers Games that released that game, and it worked really well. But the interesting thing is, from the beginning, the only thing that I cared about was to make the music sound right in the game. But quite soon, we also needed an interface. And I just almost did it the way I wanted. I didn't care about what was hard to do or anything like that. We had a guy in the beginning that Anton Holmberg is his name, that just had to realize my ideas with a graphical interface. And actually, we understood quite early that Elias was not only about making the music sound good, it was also about bringing back the control to the composers. So you could actually try everything with adaptive music and so on. And that became a core thing within Elias to change the workflow. And right now at Elias, we are also expanding to handle sound effects and everything that sounds in a game with the same approach. Because I realized not only composers needed to take back the control, also all the audio guys out there were actually almost completely dependent on programmers, and they had no freedom at all. So, and I didn't realize that at first. So it made sense. So we actually brought in a guy to the company, an audio designer, Mons. This is first time in my life I forgot his last name. Utner, Mons Utner. So he's been working really hard the last couple of years with this audio part of Elias, and we're going to release that. Yeah, we already have a beta, but somewhere Q1 next year. So we moved from just handling, not just for me, it's the most important thing in a game, the music, to handling adaptive game music to take care of the whole audio chain. So that is where the company is right now.
Yeah, maybe for a little bit of context, we started prototyping like early 2013. So it's we've been going for a while. We've been an official company since 2014. So we've spent a few years building up the infrastructure and, you know, really testing the waters. And yeah, this is where we are now.
Yeah. I think you're muted.
There we go.
Yeah.
Sound tech and music. Oh, man. I just realized I'm talking to two sound engineers, so this is embarrassing. Super self-conscious now. Sound tech and music software, or at least the sound department, I've always felt a little bad for, because you guys are always like kind of handed over at last minute, and you have the littlest of time to actually work with the game, right? Seems like everything is kind of like delayed to the very last minute and then finally given to the sound department. And in my opinion, sound is the most essential part for storytelling. I think with sound, you can tell a complete story absence of visual needs, and the vice versa isn't the same. Just being able to kind of play a game with no sound, it just completely removes the experience, in my opinion, right?
And yeah, I mean, taking a comparison, if you're watching a horror movie, you know, and you turn the music off, it's not going to be as scary anymore. Hitchcock's not the same, you know, I stole that line from you, Chris. It's like an old one that you used years ago. but I liked it, so I'm going to...
Yeah, you said one really interesting thing that I also... When you're doing like music or sound for film, or you're also last in the chain almost. As a composer, you need the final cut to make the music. But what you're doing you can't create bugs when you're making a score for a film. Being an audio team and the composer coming in at the last minute, you will introduce bugs. And that is also one of the most important thing we are solving with our engine, so that the audio teams can start from day one. They don't need the whole game to start working. Just to avoid that. I think almost every game out there, the audio team has been in crunch for at least 6 months before the game is released. So we are trying to solve that.
Yeah, essentially to break it down for the devs who might not be familiar with a lot of audio software, what we're doing is it's a sort of a visual scripting language. So you can see exactly what's going on. You have a lot of runtime debugging that hopefully should make sense when you're watching it. And the idea is that you get inputs, you know, basic inputs from the game engine itself. And then you actually, the audio system that we're building handles the logic. So you script the logic within our system, which means that you're in a bit of a sandbox. Like if you mess up, yes, you can mess up the sounds, but you can't actually have an impact on the rest of the team. You know, like if you're working like right in the game engine, you can easily introduce bugs for other departments, which we're trying to minimize as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, I think what you guys are doing is pretty essential, because like I kind of mentioned, because being last in the chain, and I've been kind of seeing this with with animation, like certain departments just haven't had any software updates. Like I come with an environment art background. And so with environment artists, character artists, pretty much visual effects artists, you see like these major upgrades. And every year there's new software that we have to like sit down and buckle down to learn. Animators are still animating with Maya or Max. There are better improvements with mocap and stuff that are slowly, but they're a little slower. And then the sound department, because I don't know what it is. Maybe you guys can give some light into this. Kind of paint a picture of, you know, what is out there for sound designers, where Elias Software had to come around to kind of fix this issue. What was the landscape looking like where you guys felt like there was a huge missing need for composers out there?
Yeah, for me, it was like there are two. I don't want to. There are two great softwares out there that are solving a lot of important problems with audio. The only thing is that they, I'm trying to put this kind of nice, but they are solving problems 15 years ago.
Right.
And these problems need to be solved today as well, of course. But I think, as you said, all the other departments has got new tools since then. And you expect the way you expect today is that if you're a composer, you would be able to handle the whole process of implementing music to your game. That I think would be most composers' idea when they start working. And then when they realize, okay, so there it has to be like three or four persons between me and the game, like programmers and audio guys, and that is quite surprising, I think, but I think it has to do a lot with what you just said, that I don't find the answer to why the audio part is so slow compared to other departments, but do you have a better answer, Philip?
Well, I mean, I think it's just a matter of you know, reducing the underlying complexity when it comes to how much coding is needed. I think that's, you know, where the major game engines have taken leaps, you know, in the last decade, certainly. And I feel like audio has been left behind. And I mean, just given, you know, how we've set up our, you know, visual scripting system. It feels weird for me to advertise visual solutions, but I'm going to do it. I mean, you know, like I think it really helps to be able to see exactly what's going on and be able to follow the control flow in real time as you're playing the game. Cause that's another important point, is that you can actually change the logic of the audio as you're playing the game without restarting the game. That's a huge important point to mention, is that you don't have all this iteration time going back and forth, rebuilding, you know, sound banks, restarting the game, or sometimes even rebuilding the game. None of that, you know, you can do it live. And that's I think that's a huge boost for productivity, if anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also we got a lot of input before we took the leap to do this audio part. We actually helped with a company called Orchestral Tools building their new sampler. And it was kind of the same. When they first talked about their ideas, I was a little bit like, well, do we need this? I was perfectly fine with my samplers. But then using the sampler now, I can't go back. So it has to be someone, I think, that takes the first step, then you realize why you needed it.
Hey, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. So as you guys may know or may not know, for new and old listeners, that I'm a big proponent for game dev education, so much so that I spent pretty much half of my career on the side teaching to colleges while making AAA games. Well, in the last 5 years, I've dedicated all that time to create a new school called Game School Online. And I've spent that time to kind of help educate and give access to students around the world that don't usually have access to game dev education, quality game dev education that are structured curriculum, that are also being mentored by AAA developers. So if you want to have that time, 30 minutes a week, 30 minutes a month, or even with some of our students are meeting an hour a week, every week with our scholars that range from design, programming, art, environment art, character art, and so on and so forth, you want to drop by Game School Online and give it a try. This is a great opportunity to have access to the greatest developers around the world at a very affordable price. I like to kind of correlate it to, if you were to pay this out of pocket to a physical school, you're basically paying 100 times more. And what's great about our program is that you're getting like a personal trainer that is adapting to your needs and to your wants and goals to give you a one-on-one session to the best education possible, right? So drop by gameschoolonline.com. Link in description can be found in this episode. To start your game dev career, this is a great opportunity. This is the best way to learn. And we have proven in the last 4 to 5 years that students that are finally graduating are finding great jobs at a fraction of the cost. So go to gameschoolonline.com, give it a try, give it some love. Now back to this week's episode. To help paint the picture, in my experience, the sound department had always been like this very intimate, small group. You guys always had the best office out of everybody. I always teased the fact that you guys are streaming movies all day with your surround sound and setup in your private soundproof office all the time. So for that reason, there's so much, limited rooms. I don't know what it is, but it seems like the sound department has always been like 3 to 4 guys at most per game company that I've been at. And I don't know if that kind of translates to maybe why there has been a slower push to new software for companies to use, maybe.
I think you're on to something. I think just because the audio department, they can't work, at least before, they can't work at the same time in the same way as other department can do, can't collaborate as easy. So it makes the department smaller. They have to be kind of serialized in the process. So just the fact that that department used to be smaller, it could be a clue as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, people using Unity or Unreal at the company will always be more people than those using the specialized audio software.
Yeah. And one of the biggest software or need for software upgrades have always been, at least in the environment and art department, has been because of real-time feedback, something that Philip, you were kind of alluding to, because the old way, let's take light baking, for example, or older proprietary engine that isn't Unreal or Unity, where artists literally just, best way to use it is blindly just kind of light a scene and walk away, basically, until they kind of bake it onto a console and kind of take a look at what they've done. And that was a process for a long time. And because of, most recently, ray tracing and all these other lighting techniques and needs, we're able to kind of light an environment and see real-time feedback, right? And this is sounding like something that you guys are doing with Elias Software, where composers especially are needing to see the setup. And not only that, seeing how having full control of scenarios of the player's movement and and be able to play with that. So that alone is something new that I haven't heard of, and very exciting. If you guys can expand on that a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, so we're trying to solve essentially the same fundamental problems for composers and sound designers. So we're trying to cover both fields, you know. And I think being able to actually prototype at an early stage of the development process before, you know, the scenes are done, the artwork's done, you know, you have just like the filler sounds, you know, things like that. It's like really early. You can still prototype your logic even within the software without even having a game engine attached. You can actually prototype, you know, your logic flow, your control flow. So, you know, there's a small step from being able to try it at that early stage and actually coming up with models, you know, for your audio, and then hooking this up to the game engine and taking, you know, in like real time input and then seeing how it responds. That's a smooth transition that you're doing. You can actually, you know, start early, build up your data structures, essentially your, you know, not in terms of coding, but like in terms of when, you know, for example, when I, you know, my foot collides with the ground, you want to do a footstep based on, for example, is it the left foot, the right foot? Is it mm-hmm. snow? Is it concrete? Are we walking? Are we running? Are we landing after a jump? All of that you set up from within the audio system. So the only input in that scenario that you would take from the game engine is, okay, foot collided, do something, you know? And so if you only need that small amount of input, it becomes pretty easy to try out different scenarios and swap sounds. You could even swap sounds in real time as you're playing as well. So when you finally hook up the game engine to it, it's a pretty smooth process, you know, to actually try it out.
Important, Philip, is that the game engine is hooked up to it. You can do everything you just said live. So
yeah, exactly. So you can do it either within the software when I was like I was describing in the early stages, or you can, you know, you can do it while the game is running. Like I said before. So you can actually you know, play the game, make some small change to the logic in the software. Do not restart the game. Just take another step, and you'll notice it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah, I just realized when I'm redesigning the music system now for this new engine, I got kind of stuck a couple of times, or 20, 30 times, when you're trying to cover all scenarios, until I realized what I was trying to do was that we need to, and it's the same for the audio department, we need to design for every, what do you call it, every... Well, at first, as a composer, the thing you want to do is just throw in some files and test how it sounds to go between them and so on, and just some easy previewing. And you don't need the game for that. And that needs to be the way it is today, actually, in our music software. But then you want to arrange your music for the game. And that's kind of a different job. Then you're going more into details, and you need to be able to tweak whatever you like and so on. And then also the implementing part of it needs to be creative and fun and no code. In our case, the visual scripting. I think most of the solutions out there are either taking care of the last process. Let's say you're doing a very small game. You're in the beginning of a game, but you need to go through a million tools, a million stages of that software just to try it. So it's not really work. It's not really made to do some previewing and some first steps, if you like. And then you can also do the other way around, where the software is really easy to preview and start, but when you come to the end of a game, you don't have all the tools that you need to make it safe for the game. I'm not sure I'm making 100% sense here, because it's still, but I think what we're trying to do is that it should be intuitive, fast, and fun to work with from the start, but you also need to it needs to handle the bigger games with thousands and thousands of files, and so we need to really have a really great file system and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think that part is your part, Philip.
Yeah, that's the my last part.
Yeah. To make it really stable and connected.
And make it scale. Yeah.
Yeah. And my part is more the first step, trying to be, I'm trying to be that composer I was back in the days when I didn't know any tech, because that is what we're trying to do. Technology for composers and not for engineers.
Yeah. And I think that plays a major part. And to kind of relate, like, less with working with Unreal and Unity, proprietary engine for artists have always been a new program for a certain aspect. It's like literally a new program for modeling, a new program for lighting. It's all a separate program that makes into sometimes going back into Maya as the main engine to make everything work in tandem. And a lot of the times the experts are the ones that are not exactly fully creative with their job, but it's more like how fast can they get from A to Z by guessing, like who is the best guesser of how it would look at the end. And in your case is how it sounds at the end when you play it on the console. And as you can see, that kind of leaves out a lot of the creativity and room to experiment during the process, which is essential for game developers, for any creatives, to kind of play with things and not be worried about time. And time, if anything, for game developers, is the key thing. Is we're always trying to hit deadlines. So, I mean, there's a lot of constraints already with game development, and having tools being a blocker have always been, at least in my experience, been so frustrating to create anything. And so to hear a solution, at least for the sound department, finally, from you guys, if I can just go ahead and ask, it's like, you know, what was the time frame before and after Elias software that composers were dealing with? Like, how long would it take one from concept to finish, pre 2013 with you guys, just to paint a picture for people out there to kind of see, you know, how much time is being saved by working with your guys' software?
Yeah, I can just talk for my own experience. We don't have any, it's hard to make kind of exact numbers and so on, but working with that game I did before was more like, you know that you're going to write to something, and you get a playthrough of that level. And then you start making the music for that level, and you kind of guess how long you will be in this certain level. Let's say, you're going to play, if you're not that good gamer, you're going to be in this area for, I don't know, 5 minutes or something like that. And then you probably make kind of 2 or 3 minutes music, and you loop it. That was how we did it. The way it was, we did the music, we sent it over to the studio, and like a month later, we might see it in the game and maybe even play that level. And very many times you realize at that point that, we needed a lot more music here. Too bad we can't hire the symphonic orchestra again. We have to use some other software to fill in the gaps and so on. But and it was like that the whole process, that you see a result like a month later all of the time. So in that case, it wouldn't be fair to maybe compare it, because we didn't handle the... We just composed music. It was the only way, and we gave it to programmers or you guys. If you know these other programs today, it will be faster, of course. But we had some... there were one guy trying to compare us to other middlewares and did the same adaptive music in all of them. And was it like, Philip, 3 days in the others took 3 hours in ours?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That of course triggered us to really continue on that path, try to, because the main thing with Elias is that we really want to give control to the creative persons.
Yeah.
They need to be able to do everything possible they can do, because every time you have to rely on another person, the creativity dies. It's very hard to go into the mode again. Like for us, a month later, trying to imagine, okay, why is this music sounding like this? And maybe we got another playthrough. And that's also what I thought was very strange. We actually did film scoring to one person's gameplay. And if it's an open world or something like that, you don't know how this person will, what route he will take and so on. So then it gets even more important to, you have to be able to play the game with your music as fast as possible as a composer. And I think it's the same way if you think of other areas for a composer today. Like if you go back 30 years, then you might have, you wrote down something, you played on your small recorder or something, but then at the point you went into the studio and you were in the hands of producers and engineers and things like that. We don't have that today, because having a studio today is so cheap for anyone. So we start hearing music, even pop music, that with a lot of experimentation more than before, because it's possible. And I would like that to be the case within games as well. You choose a composer because of his composing skills, not if it's technical enough to do it, if you see my point.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, aside from just the time of being able to spit out a quality product versus how it was before, where the process would take longer, that, like you said, the experimentation, you get more variety during those 3 hours versus three days, where the composer is not shy from trying new things because it's so iterative, it's so fast.
Yeah.
And that alone is already making the industry better, I think. And like what you said, like, it's very odd that we've always treated games like film, because we're very different, and it's very natural to make the connection, but we're way more interactive, and the player is literally leading the story, right?
Yeah.
In the movement. And so, at least on the art side, we've been trying to adapt to that with lighting and material changes and visual effects to visually kind of support that. But audio has been something that been lagging a bit behind because of the tools. And I can't highlight this enough. Tools is, to me, and I've worked on so many different engines, so many crappy ones, and tools have always been a major factor in how I'm going to enjoy this game development experience or not. Especially if you were exposed to good tools before, and then suddenly you have to like go back to caveman drawing tools. It really hurts you as a game developer to like, why are we still doing this? It's like, aren't you guys paying attention outside? Look out the window and see what everyone is, you know, what the cool thing is to do now. It really just really kills the mood and creativity to the point where you're just doing what you know versus what you and exploring what you don't know instead of exploring what you don't know. And
an important thing is I think the boundaries of music in games hasn't been pushed yet, because there hasn't been a way to do it. if you see what I mean, because to be able to push the limit of what game music should be. Of course, it will be something similar to film scoring, but as you said, it's adaptive. And the only way to do that, I think, is if we get rid of all the middle steps. The composer is actually composing for the game with the game in the studio, so he can do some horrible tries. It doesn't. If he thinks, well, this should be first tries doing a ship tune, and then no, maybe a symphonic orchestra, or this, or maybe heavy metal. He should be able to just throw in ideas and try them. Now I don't think you dare to do that because you know the time limit and so on. So it often ends up Hans Zimmer copies a lot of the times because you know it will work.
So let me throw a question over to Philip. I don't want to glaze over this because, you know, we're talking about sound and hearing is kind of like your superpower. And recently this year, especially, there is an attempt for accessibility, right? And which also means that years before, accessibility was non-existent, at least in my viewpoint, right? But somehow you found yourself in this game industry, and you were kind of commenting as a joke, like you make games, but you can't play them right now. Do you mind kind of giving a bigger glimpse of that? Because I think that helps with why you guys develop Elias software, because you're essentially creating an avenue for developers out there that are haven't been paying attention to, frankly, right? And I think that's a huge component of who you guys are too. It's like you guys are really concentrating on making sure accessibility is a major point of this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I guess, how can I say, good audio middleware doesn't give you accessibility automatically. It doesn't really work like that. But I mean, having good audio tools is an essential part of being able to design audio environments that are, you know, inclusive and that are immersive enough to give you that experience, to give you all the, I guess, indicators and like sound cues and so on that you need in order to make a game accessible. But there's still a lot of other types of work that goes into making a title fully accessible. Some companies have been taking steps on console and so on to do that recently, which I think is great. We're not there yet. But you know, the fact that the industry is recognizing it, I think for me personally, as a totally blind person, is a huge deal. I mean, I haven't been able to play games for a long time. I mean, like I said, I make games for the blind, you know, but they're sort of inaccessible in other ways because sighted people can't usually play them. So they're not inclusive either, you know.
I've tried.
Yeah, yeah, and you die. It's hilarious. I will pay you just to watch you die. If you
yeah, I didn't understand a thing.
Oh well, I mean, but to be serious, like I think you know, the accessibility aspect in the gaming industry as a whole is huge, and I think maybe in a small way I can influence that, and if I can, you know, even help the industry in a small way forward, I think that's, you know, that's worth my time.
And also, I think we need to say that in the beginning of Elias, my main thing was that, of course, our own software will be accessible. And it was like that for the first year, I think, Philip, until we got a lot of client requests and things like that. We had to just be able to build things for the clients. And those features kind of wasn't accessible.
Yeah, I mean, it usually happens like when you, at least, you know, when making software in general, usually when a piece of software is accessible, at least in the old days, it used to be that software would be accessible by accident. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you use the old fashioned, you know, components like, say on Windows, you're using the Win32 API and you're using the, you know, the regular window control creation functions, et cetera, et cetera, it more or less becomes accessible out of the box. Now, a lot of GUIs and especially games aren't rendered like that. They're rendered, you know, with like OpenGL or whatever, something that the software that we use to access, you know, computers called a screen reader can't interpret. And, you know, in a game, of course, it's impossible. You can't glean even the slightest, you know, piece, like amount of information from the rendering, at least not so far. So what's needed there is, you know, the ability to show everything that you would show you know, with graphics, to do that with sound, or indeed other, you know, ways of conveying information. I mean, it's really easy. Can you turn the screen off and win? You know, if the answer is yes, then you've got at least blind accessibility. There's other type of accessibility that, you know, the industry is working on, you know, like, you know, could be, for example, if you're deaf, or if you have a, you know, some other, you know, diagnosis that somehow hinders you from enjoying the experience fully. I mean, those are important points. And I think, for our part at Elias, you know, we can work towards better audio solutions. And that, I think, in the long term will also help improve accessibility, because, you know, people have the audio tools at their disposal. They have more time to focus on it. So, I mean, if the audio team has more time, why not put more accessibility in there? And I think it should be, you know, for a studio that has, you know, high reaching goals for inclusivity in their title, accessibility should be on the table. It shouldn't be an afterthought. It should be there from day one. And it really needs to be, if you're going to design an inclusive experience, it has to be. Now I sound like I'm, you know, on a crusade here. I'm not really, but I do think it's important. You know, and I think the industry is moving in the right direction.
But one exciting thing that I think when we are developing is that when we took the we have a really graphical interface, so it's not made for you. But then we realized that not everyone wants to work like this. Not everyone wants to working in the Node graph. So there needs to be other ways to work with the sound as well. And then, almost by accident again, we get it accessible for you slow by slow, where you will be like the power user for that system.
Yeah. So you can expose it in other ways. Like when we're talking about development tools, you can expose it via scripting, like say Python or Lua or something like that. You can expose it via keyboard shortcuts, something that I'm not personally very fond of. You can expose it through, you know, having a really good tabbable interface, really good menus, don't use ribbons, things like that. You know?
Yeah, I completely agree with you guys. I think, you know, the being more inclusive makes a better product at the end, because now you're more zeroed in on certain aspects to tell the story and not have to rely on one thing, which is mostly visual, to kind of get a player from point A to point Z. And it actually puts pause a lot of to creatives to take a step back, I think, to kind of review the product as a whole. And I've seen a lot of at least some effort this past year because of not directly with games, but at least the development of games. It seems like because of the pandemic kind of shifted our mindset a lot to how we approach game development process, where people used to be in the office all the time. And now people are mostly relying on, you know, the internet to kind of connect.
I didn't go to the office in the first place. But
right. So now everyone is like adapting to how you were working, Philip, where before we had these like subtle cues in the office that we can rely on. Now we have to be over communicative to make sure that everyone is working towards the goal on this, you know, and hit the deadlines, right? In a different way. And
there are very few positive aspects of this horrible pandemic, but I guess one of them in one way, if we're going to look for a positive aspect, it would be increased communication, I think. That's for sure.
And I think also it's made more people gets the information within the office, because many times you forget to tell someone or something like that at the office. But in this way, everyone gets the right information, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely trying to make it. A lot of studios are struggling right now, which is one of the side effects of the pandemic being so long, is that it's really pushing people to figure this out and not have to like just abandon it completely, or the progress we've made, right? Because it's like, hey, guess what? The pandemic, look outside the window, it's still here. So even though this is hard, you're still going to have to push through this and figure this out to make sure the communication is still there. Because it's looking like this for the next year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing pretty well though. We're a small agile company. You know, we can move pretty rapidly and make changes, you know, and that's why it's one reason why I love it, because, you know, we're able to adapt, we're able to, you know, make the changes that are necessary to, you know, to not only survive, but actually thrive and grow, you know, which is what we're doing at the moment.
Absolutely.
So one of the obvious advantages is that your software is allowing sound designers and composers to have fun, right? Which is I think the main thing with any great tool, and which also makes it difficult too, because with some senior designers and composers, they can go from studio to studio and like, this is the stuff I need, you know, get it from me, right? And hopefully that's the case forever and ever. And how much are you guys are hearing from designers that are so used to your tool? I can't imagine them having such a tough time to kind of like continue using the tool. But again, the studio is kind of like dictator of budget and all this stuff. Like,
yeah, I think
how much do they miss your stuff when they can't use it anymore is essentially what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think being a composer using a license and in the next game, you're not allowed to. I think it's kind of frustrating. I've been there myself. I'm actually helping out with the game that studio that isn't using Elias and helping up the composing there. And it gets frustrating, especially when you maybe work like 3 or 4 weeks building kind of a system on top of what they're using, just to be able to do things that Elias could do out of the box. And for me especially, that gets extra frustrating. But I think what we're doing right now with the new audio solution, the toughest thing I think is going to be this kind of studios that isn't really making, how should I put this? There are so many games out there where the actual economy is more important than the game idea. And these studios are really satisfying having old proven tech sitting in their office, and they don't really care if it's old or if it's... So these studios will be the toughest. I think our first studios and the first collaborations we have already is with this kind of studios that is trying to break new ground and do something new. It's going to be our first clients or collaborators.
Early adopters, I guess.
And hopefully, these guys will move on to the next studio and want to have the same experience and so on. And eventually, we even meet this more money machine games also, because we are going to help them with the process.
We did have a case though a little while ago where you told me that the composer friend of yours lost a gig because he wanted to use Elias and the studio didn't know
it was the other way around. He didn't know Elias.
Right.
So he didn't get the gig. And but I actually talked to that studio and said, well, this composer will learn Elias in a day tops, so he can still so don't fire him.
I think in my experience it's been always the same. It's always the artists or developers kind of pushing for a tool and software, because the man with the money, right, it doesn't know anything. Can't you use software 10 years ago? We make games back then, they still make games now. Yeah, there's the whole argument usually about new software, and it's always up to the senior developers, the lead developers of that department to kind of push for what works. And a lot of it's demoing, really. It's like, hey, using time as money. It's like, hey, instead of paying me 3 weeks to do something, I can do it in 3 hours. Like, what would you say? You know, that's when you kind of get their attention. The initial investment is worth it.
Absolutely. The talk. I actually heard of the other day. I was so glad because I heard an opposite story, because a guy wanted to use Elias. And the reason he wanted to do it is that, well, this time our we have a it's kind of a risk project and a high budget game, so the studio don't want any old software. And I was like, yeah, that's the way to go. That's the opposite of what I'm used to here. So they really wanted to have the new tools so they don't waste time and so on.
Yeah, and a lot of that is just letting the industry age a bit to understand what good tools mean. And yeah, somehow that trickles into the upper management in a good way and helps developers around for sure. So we're almost at the hour mark, guys. And I want to thank you both for coming on and chatting with me. I do want to end it with one last question. And that is a fun question, especially with software developers such as yourselves, is that I always like to kind of talk about what the next 5 years look like, either for the industry as a whole or your specific discipline, which is the sound department. Like, what are you imagining with VR, AR, with mobile device, all these hardware that's coming out and all these new ways to experiment interactive stories, even with Netflix, right? Not a lot of people account Netflix with its like choose your own adventure, which is like a new thing that they're trying as a game, but it essentially is a game. And yep, I count it as a game industry pioneering right there. Where do you feel Elias Software, sound in general, is going to be playing and growing in those areas?
Well, do you want to start?
Yeah, you're the product guy. You want to take that one?
yeah. To me, I see it like this, especially when looking at where you do the coolest films or series right now is within Unreal, I think, with The Mandalorian and so on. And so you kind of blurs out what is the game and what is the gaming industry and what's the film industry. And I think that is just going to continue and continue. So it's more going to be like, this is what I think, at least, that, okay, I'm in the mood for like A New Hope, Star Wars, A New Hope. a bad example. It's a very old movie, but let's say it's a remake of that movie. I'm in the mood for that today. Do I want to play it, or do I want to just look at it, or do I want to have some input, or do I even want to be in it? Do I want to have the VR set and everything? I think it's going to be more like you choose what level of integration you want to be in yourself. I think that also make for us as a tools company, we have to think about that and not just right now. The last years we have been focusing really hard on games, but I think that is going to open up. I actually hired a composer that we're doing music for a cartoon, and they were going to do it within Unreal. And they were also going to do a game, they decided after. So we actually got the gig as a cartoon music composer, but it automatically became a game composing as well. And I think that's going to be more and more common.
And for my part, I've got, 2 points, I guess. Big picture, I'm excited about the development in things like HRTF, because I think that's going to, in a very real sense, increase accessibility, actually, because you can actually convey more information if you can do RTHF correctly, head-related transfer function. I need more coffee, I think. HRTF, if you can do that properly, you can actually convey more information in a clearer way, from an accessibility point of view. So I'm really excited about that. Of course, I'm excited about the tool sets and the tool chains also becoming more usable for me personally. Just the way we can use audio to make the storytelling and the overall gaming experience more immersive, I think, is, what gets me fired up, but I guess on a personal level, get me my terminal, get me GCC, and get me more pizza, and I'll be good to go.
I do want to sign off what you guys are saying. It's like, it is an interesting time going forward in the entertainment business. Like, we've seen the lines being blurred a lot between the film and games, especially with the Mandalorian kind of leading a lot of the innovations, using a game engine essentially to kind of help with filming the sets. I'm sure you guys are kept up with that too. It's like, you know, how filming works after the pandemic is going to change forever with less people on set. In the Mandalorian didn't skip a beat, right? Jon Favreau, the director of that series, were saying that because of how they set up the digital sets and using Unreal, that they can have a lot of their artists remote and be able to kind of change the background and just the actors on set, and not a lot of people or crew need to be physically there, which is fantastic. And a lot of that, I think, with the hardware, like you were saying, Christopher, with VR, AR, and all these ways to kind of experience a story, will somehow maybe a license or something combines all those choices and options for the user, especially to experience. It would be just like a selection process. Like, do you want to play this? Do you want to see this? Do you want to experience it in VR? I really do agree with you on that. It's like, it's going to be even more important, because I think interactivity is going to be king at the end. In the end, it's like, people want to be able to kind of, we're seeing it everywhere, right? People are on TikTok and people are on YouTube. Like, people want to be a part of the story and not just, you know, just be a viewer of it, is the best way I can put it. Yeah. But I want to thank you guys for your time. And this is the part of the podcast where I shut up and hand the mic over to you guys to promote, give attention to anything that you want to talk about. So go for it.
All right. I feel like we have promoted our software during this interview. But if you're interested in trying, just apply for our Elias Insiders program, and you can try the software, the new software. We also have the music product is already out there. And now I sound like a salesman, you just said what I want to talk about. It could of course be other things as well, but now I chose to do that. So just go into lsoftware.com and apply for the Insiders program. Philip, maybe you can say something less silly.
I was actually going to say more or less the same thing. I think what I would say in general is, you know, consider the audio very carefully. Let it be an integral part of your development process from day one. Don't let it be, you know, an afterthought. And the same goes for accessibility for different, you know, people with different types of abilities, disabilities, what have you. I think, you know, something that I'm passionate about, so I'm gonna plug it shamelessly. And you know, try to make your gaming experience more inclusive, you know. And if that's hard, you don't know how to do it, there are lots of people. You can reach out to me, you can reach out to lots of other people for advice, for help, for tips. You know, how do you do this? It's hard, but I think it's well worth it in the end.
All right. I want to, again, thank you guys for coming on. And of course, I'm going to check out Elias Software. It seems like it's a perfect tool for any developers to kind of be using the best use of their time, basically. I want to thank you both, and see you guys next week.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to today's episode.
If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.